Tonight, we're looking at Joshua chapter 2. Now, if you remember in Joshua chapter 1, we saw how Moses had died. In Joshua chapter 1, we saw how Moses had died and the next leader had been appointed. We saw how Joshua had been prepared by God to take on leadership. The people backed him, but wanted him to seek God just as Moses had done. So Joshua took command and readied the people to cross the Jordan. Now you'd think that someone who trusted God knew that God was on their side, knew that God had promised them the land, might just cross the Jordan and get on with the job. So why did he send out two spies secretly to view the land? Now any wise leader, before going into battle, would want to know as much as he could. As much as he could possibly know about what lies ahead. So it makes sense that Jericho, being the major place that they came across, should be spied out. And their weakness noted. Because the first battle was very important to win. It will give them confidence, it will settle their nerves, and it will strike fear into the surrounding area. Even though Joshua trusted God, he still needed to prepare properly. You need to meet God halfway, as the saying goes. Step out prepared, and God will meet you and help you through. Never take God for granted. I heard a story of a pastor who prepared a sermon each week. And this went on for over 20 weeks. But each time he got up to preach, Jesus said to him, "No, I want you to preach on something else." Finally came, he thought, "Well, what's the point of preparing? I'll just go." So he gets to the church, stands up in the pulpit. What do you think happened? Nothing. Because he hadn't prepared. Now, I believe that is a true story. So, if you're ever preaching, make sure you prepare. If you're ever doing anything for God, make sure you prepare. So, out went the two spies and entered Jericho. And they entered a harlot's house. Put it like that, it sounds a bit dodgy, doesn't it, really? If you just say it, you know, short. But these are places that travellers lodged in. They were like drinking places, where you could bed down for the night. But of course, if you also keep a low profile, it would be the ideal place. I don't think for a minute they had other motives in mind but their mission. So let's look at chapter two, verse one. Now Joshua the son of Nun sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, "Go view the land, especially Jericho." So they went and came to the house of a harlot named Rahab and lodged there. And it was told the king of Jericho, saying, "Behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country. So the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the country. Now, when I hear the name Acacia Grove, it sort of, for me, it springs up a mind of a nice posh road on a posh estate. I don't know why, but it just does. But acacia, obviously, I don't know if you know it, is a tree. And apparently these trees line the top of the valley where they were stopping. The valley was lush and green, ideal for pasture. But it does actually sound like a beautiful place to live. Now in Joel 3:18 we read this. And it will come to pass that day that the mountains shall drip with new wine, the hills shall flow with milk, and all the brooks of Judah shall be flooded with water. A fountain shall flow from the house of the Lord, and water the valley of Acacias. In Numbers 33:49, we see this. I'm going to read the New King James and then the Authorized Version. So in the New King James, it says they camped by the Jordan from Beth, Jezimoth, as far as the Abel Acacia Grove in the plains of Moab. And the Authorized Version says this, and they pitched by Jordan from Beth, Jezimoth, even until Abel Shittim in the plains of Moab. Now that Shittim literally means from the valley of acacias. The acacia, the tree that is on that they're on about, it had a sort of a golden tuft of blossom. And it can still be found in that area today. It was a very hard, dark wood. And it was used a lot in the tabernacle for its fittings. But may I add, it has nowhere been said that this is where they are. We have to look in other passages to find out that this is where they actually are. They're across the Jordan from Jericho. So they've just the Jordan separating them. Now, when he says he secretly sends out two spies, it implies that no one else knew about their mission. But of course, they would have been the best of the best. Fast, brave, and ones that could be trusted. Joshua had experience of spies going out into the land. He was one of the 12, the original 12. And that had problems, didn't it? This time he sends out two. Say, most probably learnt from the mistakes. Now the spies, they went into Jericho, but they were soon rumbled. The king was told. How we found out, I don't know. Doesn't say. But somehow they were spotted quickly. Whether they were on the lookout for knowing they were on the other side of the river. But this now put their lives in danger and the mission which they were on under threat. God was with them, of course, and he helped them in a difficult situation. for what would appear at first to be for no particular reason. Rahab lied for them to the king of all people. Why would she do this? Maybe she didn't like the king. And being in the profession she was, I should imagine deceit was part of everyday life. But that wasn't the reason. But we'll come back to that later. Now, commentators over the years have had great trouble with Rahab. Firstly, she was a harlot. Secondly, she lied about things. And the problem they have is that she's mentioned in the line of Jesus. Because she married Salmon, one of the princes, a prince of the tribe of Judah. But that just reminds us that Jesus was the only perfect one. Not the rest of his ancestors. Everyone is born into sin. So Rahab was no different than anyone else in God's eyes. It's just her circumstances that seems at odds with our thinking. Then, verse 4. Then the woman took the two men and hid them. She said, "Yes, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from." And it happened as the gate was being shut, when it was dark, that the men went out. Where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them. But she had brought them up to the roof and hidden them with stalks of flax, which she had laid in order on the roof. Then the men pursued them by the road to the Jordan, to the fords. And as soon as those who pursued them had gone out, they shut the gate. Now Rahab had sent them on a wild goose chase. So off they went, they headed to the fords, which were the usual places of crossing in the Jordan. And I believe there was quite a few places they could cross, but there was one near Jericho. And the gates were shut for safety, so the two men were stuck inside. It could have been, I suppose, complete panic time. But they had two major pluses on their side. Firstly, God was with them, and they knew it. But also, Rahab was on their side, and she knew the city. Verse 8. Now before they lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, "I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were on the other side of the Jordan, Sihon and Og, who you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and earth beneath." So, of course, before they've settled down, she's come up and she's explaining why. Now, those searching for them, they must have believed Rahab when she told them they'd gone. So it doesn't appear that they searched the house. I suppose they didn't think that anyone in the city would be helping those outside the city. But of course, God was working in the situation. We must always remember that no matter how bad things look, God has a plan. And he's working out his purposes. We look through human eyes. God looks at the big picture. So Rahab goes on to explain why she's helping them. But remember, no matter what her reason is, she's had to survive in life to get by. She's had to do what she can to get by. But in verse 9, it says a lot. I know that the Lord has given you the land. And this is Rahab speaking. She seemed well informed about what the Hebrews had been up to and what was happening to them. But also notice, she calls him the Lord. She appears to believe wholeheartedly in God. So the promise that the land was theirs seems to have been accepted as a result already. The land, the inhabitants have gone, well, we've no chance. God's on their side. It will happen. Rahab goes on to explain that she knows about what God has done for them, and the whole land feels the same way. Now we know at that era there was lots of local gods with a small g. But they knew and believed the God of heaven was a God to fear. When you hear that the Lord has parted the sea for them to escape Egypt, then that they had defeated two kings and totally destroyed them, I think my fight would go out of me. Fear would take its place. I can imagine that a feeling of, we're all waiting for the Hebrews to come and wipe us out. It will happen no matter what you do. And that's the impression you get. Now, of course, we know that that was God's instruction to them. It wasn't that the Hebrews were just taking it on their own shoulders to go in and wipe everybody out. God's instruction to them was to do that. And of course, in a sense, if only people had that fear today of God, Christians worldwide would live in peace. The thing is that people who call themselves Christians sometimes don't have that fear of God themselves today. And they don't read the Old Testament and get to know the real God of the Bible. It's like picking up a survival manual and only reading the second half and then wondering why you don't survive. People don't do that. But for some reason with the Bible, it's different. It's as if some invisible power is at work deceiving people. Of course, that would never happen today, would it? There's no invisible powers out there, is there? We know different. We read the whole Bible and have a more complete picture of the ways of God. Verse 12. Now therefore, I beg you, swear to me by the Lord, since I have shown you kindness, that you also will show kindness to my father's house and give me a true token, and spare my father, my mother, my brothers, my sisters, and all they have, and deliver our lives from death. Here we see Rahab, her survival instincts at work. She saw an opportunity to avoid the inevitable. Her whole family could survive, and she didn't hesitate to take the chance. Of course, behind all this, God was working. He knew how Rahab would react. So that is why the two ended up at Rahab's place. And of course, as it said, you bless Israel and you will be blessed. But notice she didn't leave anything to chance. She stated exactly what she wanted. When asking Jesus for something, be careful. Sue and I once asked for a car that ran. And that is what we got. The windows were chopped up with pieces of wood. The engine was good. And we soon learnt, be specific when you're asking. Be careful what you're asking. I mean, in a sense, the journey we're on now started 16 years ago with a comment that we made about living in a motorhome and travelling the country and working in churches, never thinking it would happen. But that's what's happening now. So just be careful when you're asking. Of course, the next time we needed a car, we were a bit more specific. And that's where we got what we asked for. A good little car, but you know, he'd pull up to the petrol station, open the door, rather than the window to pay. It was that sort of car. Right. Verse 14. So the men answered her, "Our lives for yours. If none of you tell this business of ours, and it shall be when the Lord has given us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with you." Then she let them down by a rope through the window. For the house was on the city wall. She dwelt on the wall. And she said to them, "Get to the mountains, lest the pursuers meet you. Hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Afterwards, you may go on your way." That's quite an oath coming from the two spies. Think about it. Our lives for yours. In other words, if any harm comes upon you, we will give up our lives. If your lives are on the line, you make sure that they will be safe. This all comes with conditions, though. They've got to keep quiet about it. And we will see that you're all right, and we will not be deceitful. Now, apparently, from what I've read, Jericho had two walls, an inner, stronger wall, and an outer wall. And what the people used to do is put beams across the two walls and build houses there. And it would appear that that's what Rahab had done. So, of course, her house was on the outer wall, meaning they could escape. So it was in the ideal position. Of course, this was another reason God chose Rahab, so she could let them out on the outer wall, and hence freedom. But she sounds quite an intelligent woman to me, because she knew when the searchers would be back. She sent them to safety and then home. Verse 17. So the men said to her, "We will be blameless of this oath of yours, which you have made us swear, unless, when we come into the land, you bind this line of scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down. And unless you bring your father, your mother, your brother, and all your father's household to your own house. So it shall be that whoever goes outside the doors of your house into the street, his blood shall be on his own head, and we will be guiltless. And whoever is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head, if a hand is laid on him. And if you tell the business of ours, then we will be free from your oath which you made us swear." Then she said, "According to your words, so be it." And she sent them away, and they departed. She bound the scarlet cord in the window, and they departed and went to the mountains, stayed there 3 days until the pursuers returned. The pursuers sought them all along the way, but they did not find them. Now, as Rahab had made it clear exactly what she wanted, the two spies made it clear what they wanted in return. Rahab had made them swear an oath, but they made sure that if she varied at all from the plan, they would not be held guilty. Basically, the ones she wanted to be saved had to be in her house. And if they are not inside the house and anything happens to them, they will not be held guilty and not bound by the oath. She agreed and the deal was done. And both sides knew what was expected of them. So the scarlet cord was to be tied in the window that she let them out of. So the attacking forces knew where they were. Verse 23. So the two men returned, descended from the mountain, and crossed over, and they came to Joshua, the son of Nun, and told him all that had befallen them. And they said to Joshua, "Truly the Lord has delivered all the land into our hands, for indeed all the inhabitants of the country are faint-hearted because of us." So the spies returned from their mission, safe and sound, and reported to Joshua. The fact that all the land was faint-hearted because of their presence, they seem to have accepted the fact that God had given the land to the Israelites. Well, it must have given them real confidence. Well, of course, the real danger here is that they could get all puffed up. We see it time and time again. The people of God, they start off well, and they get success, and it starts to become about them rather than God. Just only need to watch on the telly to see what happens. This can happen to anyone. But a true disciple of God will correct himself. Pastors and ministers need to keep reminding themselves that it's only about Jesus. Imagine after you're delivering a good sermon and everybody's going, "Oh, that was fantastic, that was fantastic." If the pastor or the minister is not well grounded, it can go to their head. I think that's why a lot of pastors, it's not that they don't like being thanked, but they feel uncomfortable with it. So if you're saying "well done" and that, and it seems a bit, not just on about Alan, but in general, just be aware that they might feel uncomfortable being praised. So Joshua was a godly man and would always involve God in his plans. Or can even such a godly man get ahead of God? We might see that later on. So most of you know the story of Joshua and what happens later on. Well, after Jericho. So in conclusion, God can use anyone to fulfill his purposes. And when you're looking for help from God, don't just look at Christians. It can come from anywhere. Remember, when asking something from God, be careful what you ask for. And be accurate in what you ask. And remember, God likes to be asked. After all, it's only polite, isn't it? And finally, when God is with you and blessing you, don't get too confident. And start doing things under your own strength. The Israelites got too big for their boots later on. But prepare properly and include God in your plans. Amen.